ID, the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
Are humans evolving? A recent paper in the Journal of Anatomy claims to provide an example of microevolutionary changes in the human body. Hello, I'm Eric Anderson, and today I'm joined again by Dr. Howard Glicksman for a continuation of our conversation about this recent research and what it shows or doesn't show about evolution. Welcome back, Howard.
Thanks. Great to be back, Eric.
We ended our last discussion with an example you gave about an individual undergoing bypass surgery and the importance of collateral blood flow. Today, I want to get into the meat of what all this means to the evolutionary story, but first let's pursue your example for a minute to make sure we understand the importance of collateral blood flow. In the example of the individual who hadn't experienced heart pain but had an artery that was significantly blocked, because that happened slowly as opposed to, say, a major clot or something, right?
Exactly.
And then the other arteries were able to cover that slack because there is a system of sensing that's going on within the body to say, hey, I need more oxygen flow here, I need more there, and that those arteries are actually expanding or branching off, or the more capillaries or however it's happening is expanding and increasing to supply that oxygen. Is that right?
Yeah, and generally it really has to be 100% block. Even if at 99%, you'll still have some flow through there. Here's the key point, okay? That an artery isn't just some sort of microscopic rubber hose that you can just extract, which is sort of what they're making it sound like. There's some gene regulation and it turns off sort of regress the arteries. How's it going to regress? I mean, every artery has three distinct layers of tissues all made in different types of cells. So the inside layer next to the blood is called the endothelium, and it works to prevent clotting, okay, so the blood flow continues. And the middle layer contains smooth muscle, which by contraction and relaxation controls blood flow. And then the outer layer has this elastic connective tissue that lets the artery handle the blood pressure. So somehow all of this has to die out. And basically what happens is what they refer to, because every medical researcher paper I looked at said that once the radial and ulnar artery develop, the median artery usually regresses, but none of them said that this takes place due to some sort of gene regulation. In fact, it assumes you know why if you're reading this thing. And the reason is just it's the reversal of collateralization. In other words, the new arteries, the radial and ulnar arteries, develop to take over the territory of the median artery. And these arteries would have to be bigger and have less downstream resistance, something that would make the blood flow there rather than the median artery. And remember, we just said the median artery is made up of cells, which it supplies blood to. It's not like a rubber hose that you just pull out. So with this reduced blood flow through the median artery, these cells would die off, the ones further downstream, and then it would gradually regress. And of course, this happens slowly as the radial and ulnar arteries take over the territory of the median artery. So that seems to be the mechanism that medical science seems to understand. There's no mention of some sort of gene regulation that suddenly, unless they're saying that gene regulation has something to do with the radial and ulnar artery, because the question would be, maybe they're not doing their job as well as they should be doing, and that's why the median artery is hanging around.
Right, right. Yeah, I want to pursue that line of thinking just a little bit more in a minute, but let's go with this, what you're talking about for another minute, though, because if it turns out that the persistence of the median artery is really a natural variant, if we want to call it that, I think is the term you used in the medical literature, then we're not looking at evolution at all. I mean, it's just, and it might depend on a host of factors relating to this collateralization of the blood flow, what other arteries are doing, what's being sensed in terms of the oxygen, all of these kinds of factors that might have something to do with whether a particular individual has the median artery persist. Now, the other thing that you had mentioned to me when we were chatting previously is that you have seen some medical journals talk about the persistent median artery in one arm, but not the other, and that might be another reason to think that perhaps there's not a genetic regulation going on here with the regression. Is that right?
Well, yeah, no, I think that was, my comment was, if this is some sort of gene regulation problem, then, in the study, sometimes it was in one arm and sometimes in both arms of the same person. So if there's some sort of problem going on, why is it on one side and not the other? Also, the other question would be, does this gene regulation causing a regression of a blood vessel, like an artery, like does it occur in any other limb or anywhere else in the body? Is it just in the arm? I mean, just that the whole idea, it's a very nebulous statement. You know, it's a gene regulation, and so there's, we don't know which genes, and we don't even know how it does it, okay? But, mm-hmm. but modern medicine and understanding physiology knows how a blood vessel regresses, okay? It, now, it can regress like we just discussed. You get a hardening of the arteries, and it blocks off, or a clot forms in it, or you get something called vasospasm, spasming of the artery. But other than that, everybody knows that the way blood vessels usually regress is by other arteries, in this case, the other arteries taking over their territory and the flow of blood to that artery reducing and closing off. And in fact, even in their own paper, I noticed some discrepancy. Now, I've done some other research and I found out the pediatric ultrasound study seemed to show that the median artery continues to regress after infancy into adulthood, okay? And it points out that, you know, on the average, the incidence of a persistent median artery in neonates exceeds that of adults. But the data from this study is taken only from the limbs of adults that have died without any consideration of this gradual process. In other words, not only local, mechanical, molecular, and other factors in the embryo and the fetus play a part, but also you have to consider developmental, functional, and environmental factors between birth and death. So they're looking at things in the neonate, you know, at the embryo, fetus, and the neonate, and then they jump to these people 50 or 60, you know, these years later without considering what else is going on in their body. And it seems to be a gradual process. It basically seems to, it's that this all supports the idea that the persistent median artery is related to the vicissitudes of how your circulation actually develops. In other words, if you have a persistent median artery, you should be looking at the radial and ulnar arteries as well to make sure they did their job properly, because that's the reason why it's around. It's maybe more related to them than the actual, you know, sort of not some sort of gene regulator that decides which arteries live and which die. It's all part of functional capacity. If you put two arteries in place, if they do their job right, the median artery will gradually go away. Well, sometimes it's at 8 weeks. Sometimes it's later in the fetus. Sometimes it's time at birth. Maybe it's later in pediatrics. So it shows that this is a gradual development.
Back to your comment about the hose, the artery not being like a, you know, rubber hose that you just is all made up of one material and you just pull it out or remove it, but that the cells would begin to die off to the extent that they are losing nutrients and blood flow to them. So one of the things that was mentioned in the paper, which I think does fit with what you're saying, is that it appears the artery regresses from the hand toward the forearm.
Of course.
Right, instead of the other way around. And so that would match up with what you're talking about in terms of reduced blood flow through that artery, that it would naturally regress as part of a natural process.
Well, it has to, because you can't have an artery that is not connected with the elbow. Where's the blood going to go?
Right, exactly. Yeah, if you pull out your artery and you've still got blood flow, you're going to have a problem, right?
And of course, by definition, it's just like in business, you know, like the things that further along the road, those are the ones that have problems. So it's like someone who's hardened the arteries, the first place they got problem with circulation is in their toes and the feet. The distal, I'm trying to stay away from the medical terms, but the word we use is distal and proximal. Proximal is close, distal is far. So it's the distal vessel that it's going to back from the farthest reaches is where the, you know, that's the first place, because it's the most at risk, because the flow will be coming through and then gradually peters out. And so it's at the far downstream is the farthest, you know, is where it falls.
Right. Apart. So this has been super helpful. I think there's some interesting questions that we could raise about the small sample size, whether or not this is a natural variation, whether or not this is something that really works within an estimation that they've put out that everybody, you know, within 80 years from now, everybody born is going to have a persistent median artery. There's a lot of questions we could raise about that, it sounds like. But I want to go ahead for the rest of the time here and just let's set all that aside for a moment. Let's assume that, you know, the sample size, the fact that they looked really only at two populations, all of these calculations, let's assume that all that is gospel truth.
Okay.
What does that mean for the idea that humans are evolving? So when I did my write-up at Evolution News, I kind of took the assumption that everything that they had said in the article about the data and the assumptions and the calculations was all perfectly accurate. Now, what does that tell us? So what? How does that talk to us about the idea that humans are evolving? So we've already mentioned in the first place, if not so much from the researchers themselves, but certainly from the news headlines that came out, you know, humans are growing an extra artery. That's nonsense, because this median artery, it's something that's a perfectly normal part of embryo development. Everybody has that initially. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that even if we take the assumption that they have in this article that there's a mechanism for regression in the median artery or regulated by specific genes, then we have to look at how this plays into our understanding of evolutionary theory, which they keep bringing up. So one of the things that I'm noticing is that there's a tendency in a lot of these kinds of studies to try to shoehorn biological observations into evolutionary theory. So in this paper, they talk a lot about natural selection and selection pressure. But if we look at it more closely, this is not even a good example of natural selection in action. Even if we take their numbers, you know, going from 10% up to 30% over the course of 125 years, the article itself talks about the many factors that are negative in the persistence of the median artery. And there's very little they can offer in the way of benefits, at least in their article, as to why this would persist. Now, you've talked about, from a medical standpoint, some reasons why there might be natural variation here and why it would persist. But if we're looking at it from a standpoint of, gee, this is a net negative, then it's not even clear that this has anything to do with natural selection or selection pressure. And there's also a big question as to how this could possibly take place in only 6 or 7 generations to have this big of a change within the population prevalence.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if natural selection is what drives evolution, then we have to ask ourselves, what is the advantage of a person having a persistent median artery, you know, that makes its possessor more likely to survive?
They note in their article, I just went back and looked at the language, they talked about the persistent artery potentially leading to thrombosis, aneurysm, calcification, traumatic rupture, and of course, the big one, carpal tunnel, which we talked about, which is why it's gaining a lot of interest these days in looking at this median artery. But there was very little to offer in the way of reasons why natural selection would favor this. So it just didn't make sense. There's another important contrast here that I want to focus on maybe to wrap up today. So we often hear that biology can only be understood within an evolutionary context. And yet so often this evolutionary explanation that's offered is completely lacking. And I think this was a great case to look at because the various references to selection pressure and natural selection in the article were just utterly unhelpful in understanding what's going on with this median artery. And I know that, you know, some people might be tempted to just ignore the Darwin speak as kind of a harmless narrative gloss, but it's actually harmful. It's not just unhelpful, but it actually, in this case, I think hindered the researcher's ability to ask good questions. When you say, oh, we've seen a change in biology, must be natural selection. And so they just kind of jump on that as a simplistic answer when, in fact, as we've noted, natural selection really doesn't make a lot of sense in this case. And there are some potential medical answers that you've talked about in detail, which would be a lot more helpful and useful in understanding what's going on here with the median artery.
Yeah, like I said, I think that if they realize that the problem is really the inability for the radial and ulnar artery and possibly the interosseous arteries to take over the territory of the median artery, then when they're doing their gross anatomy assessment of these arms, they should be assessing those arteries as well, as opposed to just the fact that the, you know, persistence of the median artery is still present.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to add another comment when you said the idea that nothing in biology can be understood without Darwinism. I've heard this before, that some of these high-powered scientists have said that your doctor can't be a good doctor unless he believes in Darwinism. And my response to that is, would you rather take your car to someone who can sort of tell you maybe where the car came from, or a mechanic who really knows how it works and can fix it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the distinction. I don't see how Darwinism has anything to do with my day-to-day medical practice, because medicine is about how things work. All right. Now, certainly we can argue about how it came about, but even as I just discussed earlier, the cancer research is all to do with how this tissue forms blood vessels. Okay. And what we notice is that this is obviously some sort of significant complex control system, because here we have the embryo, it's getting the blood from the placenta, but it has to form its own blood supply, and the low oxygen stimulates those cells to start forming blood vessels. It doesn't stimulate them to form lungs or an ear or a heart or a heart or an eye. You know, it makes them form what it really needs at that moment. And
right.
That is just incredible. And I think that certainly it has major consequences for your worldview and how you see where life comes from, really.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And I think this design perspective, which is something that we could bring to the table, can really provide practical and useful ways to approach problems like these and understand what's going on with the median artery, as well as providing avenues for further research. I mean, for example, if we say that, as the author suggests, this is a regulatory process that broke down, let's just assume that for a minute, whether it's regulation of the median artery itself or whether it's regulation of how the radial and ulnar arteries develop. You know, I don't need a theory of evolution. Let me be very clear. I don't need a theory of evolution to explain how a complex integrated functional system can break down. And attempting to shoehorn a theory about how these structures arose and how organisms turn into other organisms in order to explain how a complex functional system breaks down is just upside down and backwards.
Right.
You know, this is par for the course, unfortunately, in evolutionary thinking, but it really doesn't help us at all. And in fact, if it is one of these situations where we have a breakdown of a process, then we've got loss of information. And we've got a classic case of Darwin devolves, you know,
exactly.
Speaking of Behe's recent book, where we've got a loss of information, even if we assume that there's some natural selection or some benefit to the persistence of the median artery, which isn't shown at all in this article. But even if we assume that, what we end up with is a Darwin devolves situation.
Exactly. Right.
And lastly, I think there's several interesting questions that would be useful for research that we could pursue from a design perspective. For example, we talked a little bit about what's the initial biological purpose of the median artery? Are there natural limits to that artery and natural variations in the vasculature of the forearm and the hand? If the regression is indeed part of a regulatory process, why is the embryo pre-programmed to regress this median artery or to develop the radial and ulnar, if you want to take that view, which results in the regression of the median artery? Why is the embryo pre-programmed to do that? What design and engineering constraints necessitate this change in the embryo's developing? How is this controlled and initiated? And if it's due to a breakdown of a regulatory switch somewhere, are there ways that we can reactivate this? So there's a host of questions and research that can be pursued from a design perspective if we understand the overall system as being a designed, functional, purposeful system. And it can help us to approach these problems, I think, in a much more helpful and much more useful way than just saying, gee, we've seen a change in the population, natural selection, we've got our answer.
Yeah, and I would add to that is there something complementary in the legs?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
yep.
You got another set of limbs. I'm not familiar with how the arteries develop there, and maybe it's not as much of an issue. I think the issue is, I think we discussed before, prior to us talking today, was that the median artery not being present does help prevent carpal tunnel syndrome, largely because in the forearm, the tissue is very tight. If you look at your thigh or your calf or even your upper arm and you press this subcutaneous tissue, you can sort of move it around, but the wrist and the forearm particularly is very shallow, everything is really in there tight in the wrist and going through very small canals. So if you know the key thing would be to have enough blood supply in the forearm and the hand without needing an artery going right down the center, right over the nerve to cause problems. And so, you know, that may be a design, that's something that people can look at and maybe compare it with the leg, because they're supposed to be very, very similar. Is there an artery that gets turned off in the leg as well? So those are things to consider.
Yeah, excellent. Well, Howard, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you and frankly brainstorm a little bit about this interesting situation with the persistent median artery. It sounds like there's a lot that we still have to learn, but some good things coming out of the medical literature that you've provided that can help us understand what's going on here from a design perspective.
It's been a lot of fun. Thanks again, Eric.
Thank you for listening to ID the Future. If you enjoy podcasts like this, please give us a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice. For ID the Future, I'm Eric Anderson.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is Copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by Center for Science and Culture.